Well, yeah, I have just the one.
I added, I put everything into one. Okay. Well, it's, if it's posted online, people can still download it, right? People can still download it if you post it.
All right. And if I may ask for our ASOAC members who will be presenting. Thank you. Alan? Wilfred? Nareesh? And we've lost Nareesh. Oh, there they are. I'm sitting right next to Wilfred. And you're just going to sit down there, Wilfred, right? Yeah. Okay, moving on. Thank you for coming back, by the way. Global policy, global number policy, and global proposals. So we have, as we've mentioned earlier, there are six existing global policies. Three of them are on the slide. The criteria for establishment of new RIRs. It was adopted back in June 2001, and it was used in October 2002 for LATNIC as being recognized as an RIR, and then in April 2005 for AFRINIC being recognized as an RIR. Next, the global policy on IANA allocation of IPv4 space to the RIRs. This governs the IPv4 allocation from IANA to the RIRs, the units being /8s, and establishing the 18-month allocation need window. This was adopted by the ICANN board on April 8th, 2005. We have then the global policy for allocation of IPv6 address space. The IPv6 allocations from IANA to the RIRs were decided upon to be units of /12s with 18-month needs allocation windows. And this was adopted by the ICANN board per ASOAC recommendation in September 2006. The other three are the global policy for allocation of ASN blocks to the RIRs. This first one covers the ASN blocks to be allocated in units of 1024 AS numbers and adopted in July 2008. Next one, global policy for allocation of remaining V4 address space. Now, this talks about the last 5/8s in the IANA free pool. The last 5 are reserved, and one slash eight per RIR would be given from the IANA when we reach the point when there's 5 left. This was adopted by the ICANN board per ASOAC recommendation on March 6, 2009. Then the latest one that was adopted is the global IANA policy for allocation of ASN blocks to the RIRs. Now, this modified a previous global policy proposal which allowed IANA to process separately the 2-byte AS and 4-byte AS requests for AS numbers. And this extended that to through the end of 2010, rather than just the end of 2009. This was adopted on July 2010 by the ICANN board. We have the global policy for allocation of IPv4 blocks to the RIRs. This was in the 2009-2010 timeframe. We discussed this a little earlier where it was passed in 5 RIRs, but in one region, it was passed with revised text. So in that case, it no longer meets the criteria to be considered a global policy proposal. And actively currently in discussion is the global policy for IPv4 allocations by IANA post-exhaustion. The main points of this is that it allows IANA to receive address space from the IRRs, and it also allows IANA to allocate address space back to the IRRs. And this version of the slide did not have an update that I have on the status, in that there are different versions right now within each region being discussed, slightly different. And we will get that. We'll make sure we have that updated for the online version of the slides. As you can see in the AFRNIC, there's discussion. So in APNIC and Aaron, there's recommendation to adopt. We can go into more details about the activity within each region when our ASOAC members present their regional versions. Alan.
Okay. Hi, I'm Alan Barrett. I'm a representative from AFRNIC, and so I'm going to speak about the AFRNIC proposals that have been talked about during this year. Okay. So in the AFRNIC region, much the same as in the other RIRs, we have a policy development process. Anybody can propose a policy. It gets discussed on a mailing list called the Resource Policy Discussion mailing list. And membership of that list is open. Anybody is welcome to subscribe to participate in the discussions. Then after discussion on the mailing list, proposals get discussed at a public policy meeting. We have two meetings every year, and our second meeting this year was just a couple of weeks ago in Johannesburg, South Africa. If there's consensus on the mailing list and consensus in the discussion at the public policy meeting, then the proposal goes to a last call on the mailing list. And if there's still consensus at that point, then the final step is ratification by the board and eventual implementation. The policies that we've discussed this year, there have been about six of them. Two policies relating to IPv4. There's a soft landing proposal and a global policy proposal. The IPv4 soft landing proposal is about dealing with the shortage of IP address space after the final /8s get allocated by the IANA. And it divides things up into a few phases. It reserves a /12 block for unforeseen or special uses, and we can't predict now how it might be used, but the policy reserves a /12 for unforeseen circumstances. It reduces the maximum amount of space that anybody can get during any single application. And then it's got a final phase where when the amount of address space available in the free pool goes down to a /11 or the equivalent number of /24s that would make up a /11, then the allocation criteria get more restrictive, and it reduces the maximum amount of space that can be allocated at any one time to a /22. That's the equivalent of only 4/24s, what used to be called Class C blocks. This proposal has been discussed on the mailing list, and it reached consensus in the public policy meeting a couple of weeks ago, so it will be going to last call. The last call has not yet started, but it will be starting soon. sometime during December, you can expect to see that going into last call. Then the global policy, you've already heard what the policy is about. It's for allowing the IANA to distribute addresses that might be returned to them after the last /8s are exhausted. And it was discussed at the public policy meeting. There seems to be a general sentiment in favor of the proposal, but it's not yet ready to move forward, so it's still under discussion. And the next step, I suppose, would be that it would be discussed again at the next public policy meeting in 6 months' time. Though we also have an emergency process, and there has been some talk about possibly invoking the emergency process if we decide we have to implement this more quickly than the ordinary timetable would allow. There was one ASN policy discussed in the AfriNet region this year, and that's the global policy. Essentially, it's just changing the timetable for the transition between 16-bit and 32-bit AS numbers. I don't think I need to go into any more detail. It's been adequately covered already. It's been adopted. It's been ratified by the board. It's also been through the ICANN process. Okay, and then the last three proposals discussed in the AfriNet region, we changed our policy development process. Only in small ways. Some aspects of the timetable were changed, how many weeks or days you have to discuss a certain thing in a particular phase before moving on to the next phase. There were some small changes there. And the biggest change was in the way we had a change from the previous system where there was a group of three people called the PDP moderators group. It was three people in the old process. In the new process, they're two people, and they called co-chairs of the working group. So really, that's the biggest change. And it's also intending to clarify the wording. So that's been adopted. And we started using the new process at the meeting that's just been held in Johannesburg. There was a proposal about abuse contact information, essentially directing the staff to find a way of putting special information in the Who Is records associated with number allocations, so that automated tools which try to report abuse have an easy way of looking up the correct email address to send the reports to. And that reached consensus in the public policy meeting. It will be going to last call soon. And finally, there was a proposal about adding real contact email addresses to the Who Is data for autonomous system numbers. The proposal was rather vague. I'm not sure exactly what the authors intend, but it essentially is about adding an email address to some field in the Who Is, and unfortunately the authors didn't explain what they wanted in sufficient detail. So that's formally still under discussion. So if you want to participate in the AfriNet policy development process, anybody can do that. You can look at the policies and the proposals on the AfriNet webpage. The URL is up on the screen there. But essentially, if you go to www.afrinet.net, near the top of the screen, click on policies, and you'll find a list of them. You can discuss things on the resource policy discussion mailing list. There's a URL which will help you subscribe to the list if you want to. But instead of typing in that URL, why not just go to the AfriNet website, near the top click on mailing lists, and you'll get a list of them. Scroll down until you find RPD, click on that, and it'll help you subscribe. You can attend the public policy meetings. We have them twice a year. The next one is going to be in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania from the 4th to the 9th of June 2011. And finally, I want to remind you that this process is open to everybody. You do not have to be an AfriNIC member. You do not have to live or work in Africa. You do not have to hold any address allocations or assignments. Anybody can participate in the policy discussions. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Are there any questions for Alan? Great, moving on. We have Naresh Ajwani.
I think this mic will do. Good. I was actually about to propose that my name should be corrected because the version 3 was saying Naresh Ajwani as a one word. Frankly, ethnic community, if we look from a pronunciation of a Indian language, that is Hindi, it comes as apni. And the meaning of apni community is my community. And there is a big portal, a very famous portal in India, saying apni community, my community, and one can really be part of that. One of the main functions, other than number management, is a representation of the interest of Asia-Pacific community on the global stage. Each year, we conduct two open policy meetings, giving community the chance to come together for policy development, decision-making, education, information sharing, and networking, both professional and social. The first open policy meeting of each year is held as a conference track to Asia-Pacific Regional Internet Conference on Operational Technology, that is APRICOT, and the second is a standalone meeting. These meetings are held in various locations throughout Asia-Pacific and often involve cultural elements of the host economy. Since 1999, APNIC has continued to grow from its humble beginning to a membership of over almost 2,400, 56 economies, and a staff of 60 people situated in Brisbane, Australia. I would be taking you through three recently implemented policy proposals. Fourth one actually is now ratified by ICANN, so no point of my just letting you go through the detail of the same. Yeah, I will take you through. And I will also take you through six proposals under consideration, and one of them that is about global policy for IPv4 allocation by the IANA post-exhaustion version, which came on July 23rd, has its author. Both the authors are here and would request them to elaborate it. Let me begin with what have been recently implemented. IPv4, we were having an issue over the unallocated IPv4 becoming smaller, and that made us to really ponder over it and say that what we should be doing it, because earlier we were permitting organizations to exchange three or more IPv4 prefixes and receive a single portable CIDR range of equal length or one bit shorter. Now, this would have meant a bigger challenge for us, and we wanted to remove this policy that currently permits this so that there is no such issue of a policy, at least, that somebody demands it and it has to be provided. When it was introduced, it served a good purpose as it aimed to encourage return of non-contiguous small historical blocks to help to reduce the size of the global routing tabs. However, as the remaining unallocated IPv4 addresses continue to be depleted, it was becoming an increasingly difficult for APNIC to fulfill request made under this prefix exchange policy. There are many advantages. It has removed actually the first thing as a policy responsibility that APNIC will not be able to fulfill during the IPv4. exhaustion period. It prevents organization taking advantage of the exchange policy to obtain more IPv4 addresses from APNIC by routing up to the next bit without justification of the need. This is particularly, you know, is all because when we are really getting concerned and coming at the last stage of IPv4 allocation. The second policy that was removing aggregation requirement from the IPv6 initial allocation policy was with more of a single aggregate prefix. And despite that, it includes a strong recommendation about the importance of aggregation to the IPv6 policy document. The policy reduces the number of requirement to obtain IPv6 address, and that's what actually is the global objective now. This policy has come into effect very recently, or rather a month back, only November 8, 2010. It introduced a mandatory reference to IoT objects in the INETM and IPv4, IPv6, and ANS. The owners increasingly operate dedicated abuse handling departments distinct from the basic operation department. More and more network owners and other institutions are also starting to exchange data about abusive behavior with each other to more quickly allow network to identify internal abuse, external abuse, and other security problems. Currently, within the APNIC region, the growing amount of abuse reports are sent to TechC or Admin C contacts. I mean, this was a process, and as it was there on the website, these addresses were used because the APNIC, whose database currently was not having any mandatory specialized contact object for these departments. Now, with this coming in place, it is much, the networks are able to supply their own direct contact information for abuse departments. Abuse complaints are not sent to the wrong contact anymore, and permitting a greater administrative and operational flexibility and a faster abuse handling possibilities are there now. Distribution of IPv4 address is, once the final /8 period starts, is under consideration, and it's a proposal to handle any IPv4 address space received by APNIC after the final /8 policy is implemented as being part of the /8 pool, and to redistribute these resources according to the final /8 policies. After APNIC has activated the final /8 allocation policy, there is the possibility that APNIC will receive further IPv4 addresses. The policy, which is now at a global level at IANA, also may facilitate more of IPv4 addresses. And the authors, they warned that final /8 policy proposal was to have all other IPv4 allocation and assignment policies replaced by the delegation policy described in the final /8 policy itself. However, the current language of the final /8 policy doesn't explicitly repeal the other IPv4 allocation and assignment policies. The authors are therefore aware that there may be some confusion as to how such returned addresses should be distributed by APNIC. This proposal seeks to clarify the situation. We expect there is going to be a due deliberation in Hong Kong, and more favorably, the advantages will come out, which will reduce confusion possible if IPv4 resources are received outside the final /8, but during the period when the final /8 policy is active by explicitly stating how these IPv4 resources are to be handled. Eligibility for critical infrastructure assignments from the final /8 was presented in August 26 and has been written for further discussion. The policy proposal seeks to make it possible for critical infrastructure account holder such as CCTLD or GTLD to receive portable IPv4 assignment from the final /8 space. In the spirit of the final /8 policy, this proposal still ensures each account holder is the only eligible to receive one single allocation or assignment from the final /8 policy. Global policy, I think, has been discussed, so I'm skipping the same. IPv6 address allocation for deployment purposes was initiated in APNIC 30 in August, failed to reach any consensus thereby is left to the community for further discussion. The proposal is to add alternative criteria for receiving a larger than /32 initial IPv6 allocation during the initial IPv6 deployment phase, and this is proposed till 2013. Under this proposal, a network can justify more than a /32 if the network is using deployment protocol described in RFC. Alternative criteria for subsequent IPv6 allocation came in February 10, followed by a second version in March, and was returned to mailing list for further discussion in March itself. It's a proposal to enable current APNIC account holders with existing IPv6 allocation to receive subsequent IPv6 allocation from APNIC for use in networks that are not connected to the initial IPv6 allocation. An APNIC account holder with an existing /32 IPv6 allocation, or maybe larger, is unable to deaggregate that allocation into routes smaller than /32 due to the community practice of filter blocking or a Bogon list associated with RIR blocks, which are known to have a minimum allocation size of /32. We hope that even in this next discussion may take some time more, because there is a still ambiguity out in the proposal and further clarities are required. Frequent WHOIS information update request version 1 came in July 2010, followed by version 2 in August, and came for discussion last APNIC, that is August 26, however failed to reach any consensus, and it has been returned to community for further discussion. It's a proposal for APNIC to regularly contact all APNIC current account holders with a resource in the APNIC WHOIS database to ask them to actively check that all the details in WHOIS are up to date. The accuracy has been a big issue for years now. There have been several approaches to get better data accuracy within WHOIS information all over the world. There are two main reasons which are really driving or hampering to get a exact information. Wrong data is published to camouflage any wrong activity or an illegal actions. And is also, staff moves out and there is a updation which is required doesn't take place. I think, in our opinion, if a frequent reminders are there, this can be corrected. And it is actually very important. And at least, personally, I would like to see that in the next APNIC 31, we are able to take it through. Our policies are detailed in a website in the link apnic.net/policy. We look forward to your visit in APNIC 31 to find it more. And in case, if you would like to have a webcast view, that is also possible on our website, APNIC Communities website. Thank you very much. Any questions, please? I'm available on the mail as well as in person, and I have got a colleague from APNIC, Haman, who can really be pretty quick in responding vis-a-vis to my being more in a regulatory side than on a technical side. And I must thank him for this presentation, because it is with his support I was able to take you through all the policies which have been implemented and are under consideration in APNIC.
Thank you very much, Naresh. Are there any questions? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to Martin Hannigan, representing the ASOAC member representing the Aran region.
Hello, I'm Martin Hannigan with the ASOAC. I'm the Aran appointed member, and I am here to give you our update. As you may know, Aran is the American Registry for Internet Numbers with responsibility for North America and portions of the Caribbean. There are multiple ways to participate, including attending our meetings. The next meeting will be Aran 27 in San Juan, Puerto Rico, 10 to 13 April, And the meeting following that will be Aaron 28, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 12 to 14 October. Aaron holds biannual public policy meetings in the second and fourth quarters in various locations throughout the region. The meetings provide an opportunity for the entire Internet community to engage in policy discussions, network with our colleagues, and attend workshops and tutorials. All interested individuals are welcome and urged to attend the public policy and member meetings. A word about our mailing lists. We have multiple mailing lists that you may also use to participate, and specifically with regards to public policy, we have the Aaron Public Policy Mailing List, Aaron-PPML. If you go to the Aaron website, www.aaron.net, you should be able to easily navigate to descriptions of these mailing lists and subscribe if you're so inclined. So let's get on to the presentation. Oh, and I have a clicker. Okay. Slide one. okay, let's get on with it. Okay. I'm technically challenged. All right. So we're going to quickly review Aaron IPv4 policies implemented in 2010. And I believe that there's also some policies that are currently in the queue that may or may not be wrapped up in 2010 as well. So first policy, IPv4 equitable IPv4 runout, 2009-8, reduces the size of allocations to providers after Aaron receives its //8. Basically, it's an austerity measure. /24 end user minimum assignment unit 2010-2 makes it easier for end users to get IPv4 address space. IPv6 for community networks, those are networks like, for example, NGOs or diving clubs, makes it easier for community networks to request IPv6 space. IPv6 multiple discrete networks 2009-5. This one's fairly interesting. So makes it easier for providers to request multiple additional IPv6 allocations. What this actually means is that if you are a network with theoretically no backbone except the Internet, and you don't necessarily qualify under other portions of Aaron policies, like being multi-homed and multiple ASN, et cetera, you can qualify for adequate address space under this proposal, under this policy. Rework of IPv6 allocation criteria 2010-4 makes it easier for providers to get their initial allocation. I think you can see the theme that it's pretty easy to get IPv6 in the Aaron region, and saying that there's no proposal or policy in place to allow you to get IPv6 address space is basically a non-starter in our region. Continuing, POC validation 2008-7 helps to increase the accuracy of POC records. POC is point of contact. Simplified M&A transfer policy. M&A is a fancy word for mergers and acquisition. Makes it simple to accomplish these transfers and reiterates that unused address space must be returned to Aaron. So if I am a corporation and you are a corporation and I buy you and you have quite an abundant supply of address space that's unused, as I transfer those assets to my corporation, we would voluntarily and in compliance with Aaron policies, return that excess address space to Aaron to be utilized for the benefit of the community. IANA policy for allocation of ASNs to RARs, 2009-6, extends IANA's ability to process separate 2-byte and 4-byte ASN requests for the RARs throughout 2010. You got it, thanks. Thank you. Rework of IPv6 assignment criteria 2010-8 makes it easier for end users to obtain larger portions of IPv6 address space. This is currently in last call. IPv6 subsequent allocation 2010-12 makes it easier for providers to obtain additional IPv6 address space. This one is moving towards adoption. We had quite a lively discussion about this policy, and it is a global policy already, so I won't go into too much detail in case someone wasn't in the room at that time. But global policy for IPv4 allocations by the IANA post-exhaustion, that's after they deplete, allows returns to the IANA and allows IANA to issue smaller blocks to the RARs, basically something smaller or, if you're a super geek, something longer than a /8. Moving towards adoption. these are brand new proposals, proposals that have not yet been officially accepted on the Aaron Advisory Council docket and subsequently prepared to be discussed at a public policy meeting. Globally coordinated transfer policy, proposal 119. This is a way to allow RIRs to transfer space amongst themselves. The text here is fairly straightforward. It's and simple. Any RIR's resource registrant may transfer IPv4 addresses to the resource registrant of another RIR as long as the two RIRs agree and exercise internet stewardship and the values expressed in RC 2050. Basically, trying to maintain the plane so it keeps flying. Protecting number resources, policy proposal 120, IPv4 reclamation. Maryland shall use any reasonable and practical method to proactively look for fraudulently obtained and abandoned number resources and seek the return of those resources. Basically, a fairness issue with respect to the community. People committing fraud, they shouldn't have addresses. Oh, boy, more V6 policy. Isn't this great? Sensible IPv6 allocation for ISPs. Proposal 121. Current policy means many requests for /32s. Easier to get larger IPv6 allocations, nibble boundaries. This is currently just a proposal. Reserve pool for future policy development. Proposal 122. Current policy reserves an IPv4/10 to facilitate IPv6 deployment. I prefer to use transition because deployment kind of makes it sound like there's a choice, and there really isn't. And this actually will occur when Aaron gets its last /8. So when the cliff allocation happens, the last 5/8s from the IANA go out the door and one is distributed to each RIR, this policy will effectively be in effect. Reserve pool for critical infrastructure, proposal 123. Reserves an IPv4/16 for CI. This is the interesting one to you, Eric. With regards to what the definition of CI is, that would be exchange points, TLD, CC, TLD, etc. This basically takes the guesswork out of ensuring that while we transition to IPv6, that we have a functional and economically viable IPv4 network as well. Well, infrastructure. I won't comment on the network. Clarification of section 4.2.4.4, proposal 124. Currently, ISPs can request a 12-month supply of IPv4 address space. At the moment Aaron gets its /8, that supply period is reduced to 3 months, basically an austerity measure. It grandfathers in process requests that are actually in the queue at the time that exhaustion occurs, and lets them proceed to get a 12-month supply as they would have been eligible to when the process started. Basically, and I'm sure I'm going to get corrected if I flub this, and I'll try not to. Current policy basically dictates that the operational practice at the moment will be that if you have a request in the Aaron allocations request queue and it's being processed, that if that application has not completed processing and the IANA issues the last /8s, that at that point the well-thought-out austerity measures in the Aaron region will go into effect, and instead of a 12-month request, you will be assigned, if qualified, 3 months of address space, and you'll be eligible to come back again in 3 months to get another allocation. I think I mostly got that. I didn't really practice it, but John, for the most part? Okay, thanks. that one is currently a policy proposal. Efficient utilization of IPv4 requires dual stack, policy proposal 125. Current policy does not require dual stack. A portion of the policy text states that basically any new IPv4 address that's assigned, allocated, or transferred to an organization must be deployed on dual-stacked interfaces along with IPv6 addresses. So this is an attempt to kind of speed up IPv6 transition. And I think that many of you will probably understand that once we really get going, we want to get to the tipping point as soon as possible so that we don't have the expense of maintaining two sets of addresses. And this tries to encourage a much more speedy transition. Who knows? And that's all I have at this point, and thank you. Questions, comments? Great.
Thank you very much, Martin. Next up, we have Francisco.
I'll be standing. Okay, so good afternoon to you all. I'm going to be giving you a presentation representing the LACNIC region. I'm going to be giving you a small tour of all the policies that were discussed during 2010. During 2010, there were a couple meetings. LACNIC has switched back to having two meetings per year. So this year we had a meeting just recently in Sao Paulo in Brazil, and previously to that, we had the meeting in Curaçao. Yeah, I forgot. Too many meetings this year. So, okay, it was in Curaçao, and this is a summary of the policies that were discussed during that period. And I just want to give you a heads up of what's going on. So, LAC 2007-01 goes for the modification of the IPv6 prefix allocation initial allocation policy, which originally required to have the ISPs or the end users announce the assigned block as a whole, and that imposed some routing challenges. So it was changed to allow the minimum the highest aggregation with possible that was technically possible. So instead of if you get /30, instead of assigning a /30, you can now announce /32s, for example, if you need to, or 2/31s. This policy has been approved and it has been ratified by the board at this point. On IPv4. There's LAC 2009-04, which talks about the transfers of IPv4 blocks within the LACNIC region. There wasn't a policy to do so at this point, so this policy pretty much states how transfer should be done and who should be able to receive in time slots and all that. So, for example, an organization transferring a block cannot transfer that same block within 1 year, for example. So things like that. The policy has been approved and has been ratified by the board. The LEC 2009-9 is the modification and was a modification of the direct allocation to internet service providers. Pretty much allows ISPs to obtain blocks in their this policy didn't reach consensus. It's about the establishing interconnection with the provider for some reason. I remember what is it now. I was trying to move my memory back. So it's about those cases that require establishing interconnections with other providers. Let me go forward. Okay, this is the one I was looking for. So it's LAC 2010-05, and this is the initial allocation and assignment of IPv4 addresses for ISPs. And it's very similar to LAC 2010-06, and it's the assignment to end users with the needs of interconnection. And it's pretty much, there was a requirement that the users or ISPs must be multi-home to get an IPv4 assignment. And this was changed to be based on interconnection needs, because there might be some cases where an ISP might not be multi-home, but will need connection, for example, to an IXP. So to be able to do that, the policy was changed to do that. Okay, so I'm a little bit lost because it has a little different order than the one I had originally had. So I'm sorry about that, but we should be back on track. So The global policy was also discussed, which is the global policy for the IPv4 allocation by the IANA post-exhaustion era. And this policy right now has returned to the policy forums, and, well, we've already talked a lot about that. Okay, so one policy that was not directly related to IPv4 or IPv6 or ASN assignments was about having one public forum chair per linguistic community, and this policy did not reach consensus. And the other policy was about electing the chairs through electronic mechanisms. This was required because we needed broader participation during our forum meetings, and I'm glad that it reached consensus, and we currently this is the method that is to be used from now on. On ASN policies, there was the ASN in the inclusion on the WHOIS queries when available, and pretty much what LACNIC will be doing soon is they will be getting a BGP feed, and they will be looking at the announcements of the blocks that are from the LACNIC region, and they will be including the origin ASN in their WHOIS results. This policy has reached consensus. Okay, so the way to participate in the LACNIC community is by mailing list, just as any other RIR. So this is the URL for the mailing list system. The list is totally open. Anybody, like other RIRs, anybody can participate. Anyone can be part of the policy development process. No need to have resources from the region. And policies must be first submitted using this following form, which is going to be available on that URL. And the reason that we now require a form is because policy must have version and a whole bunch of IDs that make sure that we can keep track of them during time. So the next meeting will be in Cancun, Mexico. This will be from May 15th to the 20th. We invite you to participate, and I'm sure we all will be making a huge sacrifice by going there. So please make your travel arrangements, and we'll be welcome you there. So this is all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francisco. Are there any questions for Francisco? Great. Moving on, Wilfred.
Thank you, Louis. I'll try to take you through the rest of the show, the fifth part. Most of the stuff has already been explained, but after Francisco gave us the logistics about the LACNIC region, I think it's proper time to also tell you that we are operating under a very, very similar regime. So, again, you don't have to be a member of any organization. You don't have to have a contract. Everyone is invited to contribute ideas and comments. There is, as you may expect, there is a mailing list to do that. In our region, it's called AP-WG for Address Policy Working Group at RIPE.net. You can find all that stuff by way of navigating the website, www.ripe.net. That's about the logistics. Again, like the other regions in Europe and the RIPE NCC service area, we are having two meetings a year, usually. One in the range of April, May, usually, and the other one in autumn. Everyone is invited to participate in person or to participate by joining in and tuning in to the webcast and the online participation mechanisms. What did I do? Ah, just the middle button. I turned off the volume. Most of the stuff which is on the following slides, you have seen that already in the presentations from my colleagues. In our region, the policy that tries to avoid draining the pool by a small number of big requests coming in at the same time. In our region, this is called run out fairly. What we did in the RIPE region is we did not directly couple the points in time where we cut on the sort of future need documentation. We didn't want to tie that directly to a particular event like IANA draining the pool or anything like that. So in our region, it is date-based. As you can see, that there is a couple of weeks left where you are allowed to submit requests with a future view of the need for 9 months. By January 1st coming year, this is going to be reduced to 6 months, and in June, this is going to be reduced to 3 months. So even if there may be some stuff in the IANA pool, this is the regime to work in our region. The next one is just a clerical thing. In one of the policies, we mentioned a 30% usage or population rule in more than one place. And by reading that piece of text, you could come up with different interpretations what that meant. So this was just a textual amendment to actually remove the potential for ambiguities. Another thing which is not directly related to the amount of resources that can be assigned or allocated to a particular party, the next one is more on the contractual and logistics level, and it's called direct assignment to end users from the RIPE NCC, and any party which intends to receive direct assignments, the usual lingo is PI address space or AS numbers, is required to come up with a contractual relationship either with a sponsoring LIR or directly with the RIPE NCC. The background for this was that in the past, direct assignments have been made. They have been channeled to the RIPE NCC by way of an established LIR, but then we did not make sure that we are keeping track of who is actually using that stuff a couple of years from the point of distribution. So there was a chance sort of that the chain of contact, who is actually using which piece of resource, this change could have been broken. And in order to make sure this does not happen for the future assignments, and also to make sure that we are doing a little bit of cleanup for the past, there was this provision that you have to sign a contract, you have to make yourself known, and there is also the responsibility for the sponsoring LIR to keep track of those people or to keep track of those resources. Then the 2009-07, you heard that already three or four times, it's just the same. It's a global policy, and that was the reason why we had to go through that exercise in our region as well. No surprises there. Another more textual and administrative cleanup project. In our region, there already have been one or two or three different mechanisms to receive resources on a temporary basis, either for technical experiments or for traditional deployment stuff. And there was also the idea to come up with an additional one. And someone had the bright idea to say, why don't we just pull all of those things together into one document? And that's the goal of this 2010-01. In this new document, in this policy, which describes all of those capabilities to receive resources on a temporary basis, this is being put together into one document, and it is in last call, so I expect this one to be approved within a very short time frame. Then allocations from the last /8. You see our region is also thinking about how to manage the breadcrumbs that are left on our table. Again, there is a vision at the moment to make sure that all the LIRs get a little piece out of this small last set of supplies. There are also some other things like trying to come up with mechanisms to reserve a little bit from this last piece of cake. Allocation from the last /8, if you want to have the details, just go to the website 2010-02. Again, it is in last call, so this is probably going ahead within a reasonably short time. Then the last, I hope so, almost. No, not the last one. Which one? Beck? Yeah, if I may. Okay. Global policy for IPv4 allocations by the IANA post-exhaustion. That's just the same stuff that was already described in the other four regions. The my personal feeling about the discussion in the RIPE region a couple of weeks ago in Rome was that there was no big objection against the proposal. There were a couple of technical comments raised, and there were a couple of things that were questions like, what does this particular wording really mean? And this is the reason why it is going back with a revised text and will be discussed on the mailing list for another short while. Personally, I think this has very, very good chances to be adopted within a reasonably short time frame. Then about bookkeeping in the IPv6 world, as it stands right now, there is no formal requirement to document in the resource registry database each and every piece that makes up a whole /32 or a whole /31. Unless you give away big chunks of that address space to a particular owner. There was some ambiguity because in IPv4 world, every assignment, every allocation has to be documented in the resource registry. Given the current policy, this is not the case for all the distribution transactions in the IPv6 world. This proposal actually tries to align the IPv6 management rules very much along the same lines as they are in place for IPv4. So we'll go the review phase because there were a couple of discussions about what the registration should actually look like, what the tags should be, and some operational issues. Again, there wasn't any resistance about the basic idea, so this is probably going to go ahead. And the next one, 2010-07, is a really minor thing on a global scale, but it was an important thing for a small number of the operators of exchange points in Europe, because as the policy text, as it stands right now, it artificially imposes certain restrictions or certain expectations about the organizational structure of an exchange point and about the sort of contractual setup of an exchange point. And there were, I think it was just one or two sites which had a major problem with that. And we were reviewing the existing policy and found out that the interpretation that was made was in line with the text, but it was not in line with the original intent, what we wanted to achieve. So this is going to be de-ambiguitized, if this is a word, probably not. So to cleaned up and streamlined. Then, again, like in some other regions, there is this growing concern that you have to have up-to-date contact information to properly manage abuse on the network. So 2010-08 is a proposal to work on that one and to make sure that we have up-to-date information. There is there have been two other proposals which are no longer in this list because formally they were withdrawn recently. But this is a bigger area of activity in our region where we try to pull together all these individual activities, like we want to do that because of A and we want to do something slightly different because of B, and there is someone who is not happy with D. So we are going to try to put that together into some bigger framework and watch this space, whatever it's going to look like. And globally coordinated transfer policy, this was presented. It's just the same like it was in other regions, the idea being that you can actually move space under the control of the regional registries between holders of resources. This is a very, very new activity, new policy discussion in our region. As you can see, plans to start the PDP. It has been presented in Rome a couple of weeks ago, and it will be put into the funnel and put through the machinery. And that's about it. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them. No, thank you. Back to Louis.
Thank you very much, Wilfred. So are there any questions for any of us for any of the regional activities that are going on? Okay. Well, please do continue to watch the ASOAC website for news about the new global policy proposals. You can see the link is aso.icann.org. You may easily participate in the policy discussions in your region, easy being that the access availability is there. Of course, there is some demand on your time, but it is available for your access. Now, the global proposals are discussed on the RIR's policy mailing list and are also at the open policy meetings. You may subscribe and participate on the appropriate list and attend the public meetings either on-site or via remote, via web or chat. In many cases, there are online facilities for that. It is open. There are no membership requirements, and you may state your opinions and be assured that you are heard. And just to reiterate, participation is easy. You may subscribe to a list, no membership requirement, and attendance is available online and in person. Also, if you were to go out and go straight down the hall, you will see the NRO booth. There are several brochures. What's going on? Oh, okay. Well, anyway, there are several brochures covering various topics that are going on, telling you about how to participate, who we are, information about IPv6, how you might want to look at an adoption strategy, a transition strategy. So one more chance. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much for attending, and I do want to also thank Einar of and Aaron, the rest of the Aaron staff, for their support in developing this presentation. All right, bye-bye.